This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. And tonight's guest, James D. Keyes of Washington, D.C. Tonight's subject, can the Vietnamese ever govern themselves? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello. Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Washington, D.C. is Mr. James D. Keyes of the Agency for International Development. Now, Mr. Keyes has worked as a government expert in Denver and in Tulsa and in Indonesia, and for the last year has been a public administration advisor in Vietnam, organizing and training cadres for the South Vietnam government. Now, if you'd like to ask Mr. Keyes a question on tonight's topic, can the Vietnamese ever govern themselves, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our national Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Now, please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number again, area code 313-846-6601. Our operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Our guest tonight, Mr. James D. Keyes. Mr. Keyes, what is AID?
AID is the combination of initials AID, standing for the Agency for International Development, which is the agency that handles our foreign aid program.
It's part of the American government, then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, what role does it play in Vietnam?
Well, it has had really the major role up until the last 6 months.
What do you mean by that, Jim?
Well, AID and its predecessor agencies go back into Vietnam to about 1950 ago when the French were still there. And since that time, have built schools, built health centers, aid stations, roads, bridges, a number of things like this. And we've had these American technicians there advising in a great variety of fields, and only until the last year when the war escalated, the aid program has been our major contribution there.
Now, up until 6 months ago, then AID was doing the majority of work, you're saying?
Well, I hate to cut the line that way, but I think certainly in terms of long-run importance, the aid contribution was a significant element.
Would you say the military then has transplanted, as it were, or replaced AID as
well,
a primary?
Yes, Russ. It has, for the time being, and it's recognized the temporary situation. Our problem was with the deterioration in security. It was becoming more difficult to carry out the AID program, which almost without exception involves the ability to travel to the remote parts of the country.
Well, now, why was it impossible to travel in South Vietnam?
Well, with the deterioration of the security situation, that is, the increased activity by the Viet Cong, it became difficult both for the American technicians to get there, and secondly, it became somewhat dangerous for the Vietnamese to accept aid that was coming through our agency. So, little by little, beginning about a year ago, the aid activities became more restricted, and the increase then followed on the military side.
Well, now, the Viet Cong are basically South Vietnamese who are rebels. Now, why wouldn't they want aid?
Well, I think I can't accept that definition of what the Viet Cong are.
What do you feel that the Viet Cong...
Well, the Viet Cong are certainly dissidents. Now, their history, of course, goes back to the days of the revolution against the war for independence against the French. And at that time, they were called the Viet Minh. This was substantially an independence movement. a little under communist leadership.
This is under Ho Chi Minh.
Under Ho Chi Minh. At the time of independence in 1954, many of these cadres stayed in the South. They were Southerners, of course, and waited until the green light was given from Hanoi to increase their activities. And so under the leadership of these persons who fought against the French for so many years, terrorist activity began about 1959 and increased. And they, since that time, they've also received new cadres and equipment from the north. So I don't know what the proportions might be between Southerners who have always been in the South and other Viet Cong who may have originated in the South and went north in 1954 to come down later, and then regular native North Vietnamese. But
well, still, these people are Vietnamese. Now, you would imagine they'd want aid, wouldn't they? Why would they be opposed to aid?
They aren't. As a matter of fact, they can use. They have used a lot of it. They've taken some of the grain that we've taken. They certainly like the medical supplies that they can capture from us, and that sort of thing. But of course, it's to their advantage to create chaos. This is a situation that I saw fairly close at hand in Indonesia, where the communists create the chaos and blame somebody else for it and gain their own strength. And this is essentially what has been happening for 5 or 6 years in Vietnam.
Well, now, your job was to train cadres. Now,
right.
What is a cadre? I know what a cadre is in the Army, but what is it in the aid?
It's, of course, in American terminology, it means a group of persons that can be sent in to expand an organization. In
organization, that's a typical American idea, isn't it? Expand an organization.
Right. In Vietnam, the word, the Vietnamese word, comes from the Viet Minh, who used these persons to organize revolutionary activities.
Would this be in Russia like a political commissar?
No. In Europe, they're called cadres. In Vietnam, the word is cán bộ. It is a low-level type government employee, as we're using it in Vietnam, in South Vietnam. They should be persons who are highly motivated, who are able to go out and talk to the people and influence them. Also, it would be good if they know certain things, the basic elements of first aid and agriculture. But we can't do all of these things at once.
Can you give me an equivalent in the United States?
No, we don't have anything quite at this level. The closest things that we have, and they really aren't comparable, might be the welfare workers in the city or county, maybe the agricultural extension workers in a rural area. But the purpose of the cadre is political motivation and organization rather than anything else.
And what do you mean by political motivation?
Keeping the people informed factually or by propaganda as to what is going on or what they want the people to think is going on, to organize groups to do work such as harvest the rice for the people who are fighting, to cadres who will carry information, cadres who will become agents on the other side.
Spies, would this be?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. People who get a job or some way get close to the government operations, and so that when anything is going to happen, they can get the word out to the Viet Cong that there will be a military operation so that the Viet Cong can move on.
We're talking to Mr. Jim Keyes tonight of AID, which is the Agency for International Development. We're talking about the Vietnamese and the governments that they have set up for themselves, and some of the governments and the villages that we've helped them set up. If you'd like to join us here on Night Call, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. Remember, you may call, collect, you may reverse the charges. Our lines are open. Jim, when you were talking there just a second ago, you said something to the effect that we were in there helping them. Why America, and
how did they manage to survive before the Americans came on the scene? Why all of a sudden are we taking a great interest in these people and saying, well, we're going to teach you how to govern yourself? What have they been doing for centuries?
Well, Russ, that's an excellent question. How much time do I have to answer that?
We have about 5 minutes. Go ahead.
All right. This is the very close to the heart of our problem. The French, who were there for about 100 years, did nothing to develop government or to develop a bureaucracy such as the British did in India. As a matter of fact, the French suppressed all independence movements. The result was that when independence came in 1954, there was no trained group of persons who knew how to operate a government in South Vietnam. In the North, they had the communist organization, which was organized in 1925 with Ho Chi Minh as the leader then. And he's still the leader. So now we've got 40 years of constant leadership in the North on the communist side. In the South, we had to start from scratch. And this is why the nationalists in the South had to turn to Ngo Dinh Diem, who at the time was in exile. They had nobody else they could turn to who hadn't been compromised in one way or another, somebody that everyone could rally to. He'd been above it. No one could accuse him of having any personal interest in it, wealth or anything like that. He'd been a nationalist. This is why he left Vietnam in 1933, because he was a nationalist. So, in the South, we were building from nothing. And, of course, the miracle is really not the kind of problems we have today, but really that Vietnam has survived and the communists haven't already won. This is the miracle, because we have had to overcome not only the void of governmental apparatus, but actually a negative kind of void, in the sense that the people, the Vietnamese, have been trained in the French and in the Chinese Mandarin system.
Well, now, what is the Mandarin system?
Well, the Mandarin system is one that selects persons for governmental and military jobs based on a series of educational examinations. This sounds fine, but it depends, you know, on the kind of education and the problems that they presume are going to be solved. It worked pretty well in a stable, traditional-type society. The French in their almost 100 years didn't really change it, except to have it suit more accurately their needs. In other words, it was a system, this combination French-Mandarin cultural pattern was one that selected from the children of middle and upper-class Vietnamese through a system of French schools and French and Chinese Mandarin thinking, which left quite a gulf, a communications gap between the leaders, the people in power, and the masses of peasants in the rural areas. This is something that is going to take a long time to overcome, and it accounts for our difficulty in achieving success in Vietnam.
Our guest tonight is Mr. James D. Keyes, and he's with the Agency for International Development and has just returned from Vietnam. And we're talking tonight about the Vietnamese and some of the problems that they're having in governing themselves. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes?
out on that limb. Without him, it's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People, and our topic on Night Call tonight is, can the Vietnamese ever govern themselves? And we're talking with Mr. Jim Keyes, who is a gentleman from AID, which is better known as the Agency for International Development. And tonight we've been talking about whether or not it's possible for the Vietnamese to govern themselves. Why has it fallen upon American shoulders to straighten out these people as far as their ability to govern themselves? If you have a comment or a question that you'd like to make on tonight's topic, give us a buzz here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. All you have to do is dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. So let us know what you're thinking about. What do you think about Vietnam? Do you think the people are ready? Do you think all the Vietnamese want American aid there? Is this what we should be doing? Should we be teaching them how to govern themselves? Should we have them imitate the American form of government? Well, these are some of the questions that you may want to ask or may want to comment about. So give us a buzz here at Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open and our operators are on duty. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Keyes, do you think that the government that's presently in control in South Vietnam is a free government?
Well, Russ, of course that depends on the definition, and if you want to say, has it been elected? No, it hasn't been elected. But, and in that sense, of course, it is not a free government. I've had some, my own thinking in this has gone through a little cycle. Before I went to Vietnam, I was in Indonesia. And, of course, I was reading the American publications about the war in Vietnam. And I kept saying to myself, well, now, if we're spending all that money, I don't see why we just don't tell those people what to do. And then I was sent to Vietnam. Well, I know why.
Well, let us in on it.
All right. Vietnam is a country of about 15 million people. They speak a language different from ours, and they have a completely different cultural tradition than we have.
Well, how are they different? Can you give me some concrete examples?
Well, first of all, of course, they live in the southern hemisphere and live in a tropical country. They have a completely different diet, based on rice and fish primarily. They have a different religious system. That is, most of the people are Buddhist, but there are, while about 15% of the people are Catholics, there are also some other important minorities, which are combinations of Buddhism and Hinduism and Christianity. It makes for a very complex country, full of minorities. And they are a rural people, where many of them never travel more than 10 or 20 miles from home. The dialect or the accent changes when you get very far away, so they have difficulty understanding people from other parts of the country. Certainly, there is difficulty in understanding between north, central, and southern.
Can the average Vietnamese, can he read and write?
No, the average cannot. I don't know what the literacy is, but certainly literacy is less than half of the people, or the literate percentage is less than half. Although, for a developing country, they have a tremendous interest in education. Of course, this goes back to their old Chinese traditions, where education has always been highly valued. Anyone who can get an education is very happy to do it. Our aid program has built built something like 9,000 Hamlet schools. And we've done, we've provided something, I don't know, something like 5 million textbooks to help these kids read and write.
Their own language.
On the way here, but, and we've made significant advances over the previous situation. But it's a developing country, and it has many, it has all of the normal problems of a developing country with those aggravations caused by this aggression.
Well, now, several years ago, we were told that the Vietnamese people, particularly in the South, were very simple people, and that the average fella didn't care about communism or capitalism. In fact, he really didn't know, you know, what these words meant and the implications. Then we were told that, there's a lot of problem out in the countryside, and the reason that they're joining the communists is because the communists are threatening them. And we were told that forts were going to save us. We went through a period where everybody was going to live in a fort, and we compared them with the Indians and the settlers. Uh-huh. And now today we're told that these people are brave little fighters. I don't know how many generals have commented about how tough these people are. At one time we were told that they were gentle and non-warlike. Now, what are they really like, Jim?
Well, the last mission director of AID out there used to tell newly arriving Americans that Vietnam is a galaxy of contradictions.
A galaxy of contradictions.
Right. Almost anything can be found to have some basis in Vietnam. And all the things you said are true, because the things that you've said are human characteristics. They're peaceful, they're gentle. They can be brave fighters. They have all of the weaknesses, and they have all of the good characteristics of humanity.
Could we say this for the North Vietnamese, too?
I'm sure it's true. However, we have a difference of opinion between the two parts of the country.
Well, what is that difference of opinion, do you feel?
Well, the North, of course, already has a communist dictatorship, and so that's settled. In the South, they don't want this.
Do they have a dictatorship in the South, too?
I would say no, that they do not have a dictatorship in the South now. They have a military oligarchy, but this is not different from many other developing countries. As a matter of fact, because the military have the power, and because also they have a training program which encourages decision-making at a fairly low level, they are in a very good position to run most of these developing countries where most of the people are illiterate or just above the illiterate level and perhaps can read and write, but that's about all. So there's nothing wrong in having military leadership in a country like this. In Vietnam, the present military group didn't want this situation to exist. They gave it to the civilians, but the civilian chief of state and the civilian prime minister couldn't agree on how cabinet ministers should be appointed. And the result was the prime minister, Prime Minister Quat said in June to the military, fellows, you gave us a chance and we couldn't make it go, so we're going to turn it back to you. And since then, the military has been running it, and they've been running it, I think, very well. It is an oligarchy. It's a combination of Buddhist generals and Catholic generals and other and persons with various feelings, kind of neutral-type officials and many civilians. And they've been able to keep the various minorities from splintering. One of the consequences of French domination has been French-type political thinking with fractionated programmatic parties. It has resulted in an inability on the part of the Vietnamese to agree with persons that you frequently disagree with, as we do in our country, where persons of the Republican and Democratic parties can work together or within their own party with the persons at the extreme ends of it. So this is something that the Vietnamese, by culture, never had. And lacking a strong man, it was difficult to get along. But since last January, we've had on just below the highest levels a continuation of the same military and civilian personnel. Although the prime minister and the chief of state changed in this period, there has been very little change among the operating officials. So when we talk about constant merry-go-round governments in Saigon in the past year, it's somewhat of an exaggeration. True, the top officials have changed, but the operation goes on, and they're all dedicated to maintaining their independence and hoping someday to be able to operate as a free, democratic country.
Now, you mentioned the fact that the military has been able to live with fractionalized groups, as it were. But isn't this always the case with military? Isn't the reason that they can manage it is because they have the guns?
Oh, absolutely. They have the power, that's it. And nobody was kidding anybody when the civilians were running it from about last December until June, when they had a civilian chief of state and a civilian prime minister.
Well, then, Jim, how can you, as a gentleman who I'm sure is dedicated to democracy and freedom and all these things that we like to claim are ours here in the United States, how can you be teaching these people about government when you can't teach them about these things, when they're under a dictator, or I take that word back because you didn't want to use it, under a group of generals?
Well, our immediate problem is not filling them up on Thomas Jefferson. Our immediate problem is to get the government to function. We still have the problem, and it's the cause of some of our difficulties, of a lot of middle and lower level officials who were trained by the French, who find it extremely difficult to make decisions. To put it in another context, who cannot identify the problems. This is one area where I think Americans are very strong. We are very good at defining problems. When something doesn't work to our satisfaction, we try to figure out what's wrong. And once we've done that, we attempt various solutions to get it to work right. Now, the Vietnamese, who has come from a middle class or upper class background and has a government job, which he has because of his education, which he got because of his parents' status, he has difficulty, although he may talk about winning the hearts and minds of the peasants and so on, he has difficulty relating his world with to that of the needs of the peasants. So we have this communications gap. It's going to take quite a while for us to get enough people trained in Western ways of thinking, of defining problems and working for their solution, before we can have what we would call a really functioning government. We're making headway here. We have the Michigan State University group started the National Institute for Administration, training of government officials. We now turn out about 100 a year on a three-year program, and we have about another 100 coming out of a two-year program. Both of these go right into the government. The two-year program, people have already completed their law work, or they have a law degree. Then we have shorter programs for lower-level employees.
Our guest tonight is Mr. James D. Keyes. He's with AID, the Agency for International Development, and we're talking about the Vietnamese and some of the problems that they are having in governing themselves. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose.
Proceeding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb. Hello again, gentle people, and our guest tonight is Mr. James D. Keyes, and he's with AID. We're talking about the Vietnamese and some of the problems that they've had in governing themselves. If you'd like to express your opinion on the Vietnamese or whether or not Americans should be in there training the government people, give us a buzz here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. All you have to do is dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may dial us direct. You may just pick up that old telephone and give us a call. Now, you can make that call collect, or, if you wish, you may reverse the charges. So let's hear what you're thinking about. Area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here at Night Call. And, Jim, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Miss Sally Welsh. Good evening, Miss Welsh. Welcome to Night Call. Your comment, please, ma'am.
Yes, I was wondering if this man from AID would speculate on what would happen when and if the South Vietnamese win over the Viet Cong in respect to their self-government and our American influence. I was wondering if we would push a democratic regime and if they're a country that would ever be successful under democracy.
Jim?
Okay. Ms. Welch, my answer is I hope that this will happen. We have a program going. We call it Chu Hoi, which means open arms. And we're getting about 1,000, last I heard, about 1,000 defectors from the Viet Cong every month who have given up for one reason or another. We hope, we're trying to win this war on two fronts. One, the military that we read about every day, and then this other side, which doesn't get much publicity. Because if we can convince, we can't kill all of the Viet Cong. We have to convince the rest of them that are not killed that they can have a pleasant life in South Vietnam, which, for many of them, is their homeland. My answer is that they want peace and prosperity like everyone wants peace and prosperity. And as soon as they get the message that this kind of life can be gotten through the Saigon government, they will stop fighting. The country, the people can have a kind of democracy, but I certainly wouldn't say that it would duplicate ours. The leadership in South Vietnam is very conscious of democratic tradition. While I don't like all of the French traditions that they have absorbed, they certainly understand what goes with French democracy or French-type democracy. They want the opportunity to express opposition to their leaders. So I'm confident that when this fighting stops, we can move quite quickly into this area of developing a viable, peaceful, democratic society in the sense of a developing country, which is quite different, of course, than our country. In a developing country where half the people or more have difficulty reading and writing.
Sally?
Yes?
You believe that the Americans can ever teach the Vietnamese democracy as we understand it?
That's a very hard question to answer.
It's speculation.
As far as I feel, I think that their background has just been such that they aren't a stable enough people to be able to really understand what democracy can be to them.
Jim, earlier in the show, you made a statement, and I jotted it down, something to this effect. The idea that we're trying to teach the Eastern mind to think as the Western mind thinks. Sally, and Jim, I'll throw it out to both of you. Do you think this is really possible? Can we ever expect that the Eastern mind to behave as the Western mind and vice versa? And who's to say what mind is the best, you know?
I'll let Miss Wells take first crack.
Okay. Sally?
Well, I just don't think that, from my background in political science, I don't think that they have the same kind of conception of life as we do. I mean, I think they're an entirely different oriented people. And I just sometimes really wonder whether they can either have enough responsibility within themselves to have a kind of government where they are responsible to each other and not just to power.
Jim, would you care to comment?
Well, we start from a very different type of culture. This is something that Americans have difficulty adjusting to when they go abroad, and in the business they call it cultural shock. You go to these countries and everything is so different. For the first 6 months, you wonder if it's all worth it, and eventually most people come to the conclusion that it is worth it. There's something here. Now, what's there is that these people are human beings. They have the same emotions that we as human beings have. They may have different emphases. They, in the varieties of culture, they will be quite different because their traditions are different. But I'm not saying that, and I certainly would not say that we should expect them to end up with a political structure as we have in the United States. But there are certain things in our concept, in our way of life, which they like. The opportunity to express opposition to the leaders. This can be done in a number of ways, and we don't have to do it the way we do it here. Of course, in South Vietnam, and also in Indonesia, and every place I've been in Southeast Asia, they do like the American way of living. Now, these things go very close together. And I think one helps encourage the other. So that while I'm not saying in 5 or 10 years we'll have a democracy that we can point to and say, well, that's just like politics in Denver or someplace like that, we would hope that they would have a system where opposition could be expressed and where the government can change in a peaceful sort of way without having a revolution. And if we can accomplish this in 10 years, we'll have made a lot of progress.
But aren't they overabounding in opposition as it is right now?
I didn't get that, Ms. Phillips.
Well, I just wondered because in Saigon, they say in the university areas, they have people who are professional in this line. They just oppose for the sake of opposing.
You're talking about university opposition in Saigon?
Yes.
Well, they are influenced, as I said earlier, by the French tradition in politics, which calls for programmatic parties, very dogmatic in their positions, and people, as a result of this, they found it difficult to compromise and to work together. But this is not inherent in their blood, in their veins. As a matter of fact, in the last 6 months, with the present regime in Saigon, there has been considerable compromise between the various elements. And for this reason, the regime has become stable. This is a cultural thing, and cultural attitudes can be changed.
Sally, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, ma'am. Miss Sally Welsh, a young lady from Denver, Colorado, listening on KTLN. Jim, why are the Viet Cong so willing to die? I mean, why do they feel that the government Diem regime, I think originally, and the French, what did the French and the Diem regime do that was so bad that these people are still fighting anybody that's even remotely connected with the Diem or the French government, meaning the United States in this case?
Well, I don't have many Viet Cong friends, Russ, so it's difficult for me to answer in a scientific way. But it does go back at least to 1945, and some cases earlier. From 45 to 54, the communists led the war for independence. And this was not a communist war at the time. Unfortunately for the French, and unfortunately for us, the French tried to brand it as a communist revolution rather than a nationalist revolution.
Do you think the French did this purposely to bring the Americans in? Because my figures show that we were paying from 70 to 80% of the war cost for the French.
Right. I don't know if they did it deliberately or not. There was certainly some evidence that lots of evidence that the leadership was communist. But in the process, the French liquidated those anti-communist nationalists, or liquidated some of them.
What do you mean by liquidated?
The French, in one way or another, imprisoned or something, those anti-communist nationalists that didn't want to work with the French. I have some friends in Saigon now who fought both the Viet Minh and the French. On the other hand, there were some other nationalists, anti-communist nationalists, who were willing to work with the Viet Minh. Now, all of this, of course, led to a great image for Ho Chi Minh at the time independence was given in 1954. This image carries over. These images don't change very quickly. I think that things might have been quite different if Diem had been as politically sophisticated and economically sophisticated as Nehru was, for example, in India. But he wasn't. He was a prisoner to his past and his training, and he couldn't change. So he didn't. And the result was that while things went quite well, from surprisingly well, as a matter of fact, from 55 until about 58 or 59, things began to go bad in 59, and of course, the communists were able to capitalize on this. And this was Zim's inability, again, the characteristic which was maybe partly Chinese in background, but certainly also partly French, inability to compromise with his opponents. And this led to some abuses by the troops in the country.
The French troops or the Vietnamese?
Not Vietnamese troops.
Right.
Where there might be some Viet Cong. The South Vietnamese troops might be indiscriminate in their methods of search and attack. And, of course, they didn't build any points for Diem's government.
We're talking tonight with Mr. James D. Keyes, and he's with AID, better known as the Agency for International Development. And we're talking about the Vietnamese and some of the problems that these people have in governing themselves and some of the background as to why they feel about the present government as they do. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
You could make it all by yourself. Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. What do you think about the Vietnamese? Do you think it's possible that we Americans can teach them to govern themselves? Do they want to govern themselves? Are we backing the right government there? These are maybe some of the questions that you have in your mind, and here's your chance to talk to a gentleman who has just returned from Vietnam, working directly with the Vietnamese people themselves. Mr. James D. Keyes is our guest tonight, and he's with the Agency for International Development. If you'd like to call us here at Night Call, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here. Area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere, collect. You may reverse the charges. So please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And Mr. Keyes, I have a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Mr. Emery Hill. Good evening, Mr. Hill. Welcome to Night Call and your comment, please, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
I would like to ask the speaker a question. My name is Emery Hill from Ohio. I'm kind of uncertain as to whether the United States has really been giving enough emphasis to the aspirations of the Vietnamese people, trying to find out what they really want in the future, and as to whether or not after the ashes is cleared from this terrible war, whether they are going to come out favoring the American type of government. I'd like to ask the speaker if he feels that there are many or few or none of the Vietnamese people who actually might choose communism as what they think offers the cure for their social maladies, for their future.
Emery, are you suggesting that asking what would happen if an election were held today, a plebiscite in Vietnam? Would the people vote communist?
No one can answer that question, but I wonder if people in the United States have ruled out the possibility of that as one choice by people. I know that it seems unlikely that people would choose communism simply because of the history of the way communism has come about. But I wonder if it isn't a very attractive alternative, and that people in Vietnam might not feel that Americans give enough emphasis to their own hopes and their own aspirations.
Well, Emery, as you recall, between when the choice was an American choice in a roundabout way, between fighting Hitler's Germany and allowing Germany to attack the Russian, which was obviously communistic, the United States and Russia became allies. Maybe we made a similar decision one time. Maybe it would be possible, but I think we better turn that question over to Jim. Jim, what do you think about that?
Well, Mr. Hill, first of all, started by asking, are the Americans becoming conscious of the needs of the people? And what he's leading up to is, would they choose communism if they had a chance? Is that the general import, Mr. Hill, of your question?
Let me rephrase it very quickly. Do you think that the Americans in Vietnam are placing enough emphasis on finding out what particular aspirations the Vietnamese people have?
What they really want themselves.
Okay. Well, of course, aspirations includes a lot. I think in general the answer is yes, we are. In terms of the day-to-day living, and this is what, this is, of course, most important, whether they're living better today than they were last year, and whether they think their children will be living better than they're living, the impact of the aid program has been such things as new strains of rice, introducing corn in those areas where corn can be grown to increase the amount of food. In connection with this, we're introducing new races or breeds of pigs, which are several times larger and which grow faster than the traditional type. Now, that's one type of aspiration. We were pretty well zeroed in on this. We're working with the Vietnamese officials on it. Now, in terms of aspirations, political aspirations, that's something else again. Now, I don't believe we want them to. Well, our policy is to give them the opportunity to choose their own government, so they can have freedom and peace to determine the future of their own country without outside influence. Now, this is, if we can give them this, then I think that we have accomplished. We're zeroing in. We're giving them the chance to define their own aspirations. It would be presumptuous for us to tell them what is good for them in terms of their own political future. This is difficult to do even in a sophisticated political society like our own. So the Vietnamese must define their own political future, but I have no doubts about the outcome as long as they can do it by themselves without outside influence.
Emery?
Yes?
Was that a complete answer to your question?
Well, I feel that the Americans are not giving enough emphasis to some of the more complex variables. I think that there's much more to the Vietnamese people, and to any people for that matter, than the simple variables of fear and hunger. I think that the people of Vietnam have perhaps very sound ideas in some cases as to what they would like to define for themselves as to be their future society. And I don't know how we can hope to bring this about by, in the meantime, not presenting them the democratic means to make that choice.
Well, Mr. Hill, I think I agree that it's more than fear and hunger. But we cannot tell them. I don't know of any way that we can give them the kind of society which might be best for them. They've got to figure this out for themselves. Actually, this has been the process that's been going on since the fall of Diem. They have been sorting out their own political leaders. And now they have a group in power which has some popular following, strange as it may seem, since they're all military, or the key positions are all filled by military people. There are two generals in particular which are national heroes because of the attitude that they took under the Diem regime. Under the Diem regime, a certain number of the military officials felt that Diem was not pushing the fight aggressively enough against the communists. And this led to one general named T.H.I., who at the time was a colonel, leader of the paratroops, to attack the palace, an attempt at coup in 1960. As a result of this, he went into exile and stayed in exile until the fall of Diem in 1963. The other general is now the prime minister, Air Vice Marshal Key.
This is the fellow with the scarf and the flying suit.
Right. He's a very dramatic person. He bombed the palace in about March of 1962, again attempting to get rid of Diem so that the war against the communists could be pursued more aggressively.
Actually, then, the Diem regime was a very unpopular regime with the people in South Vietnam.
There's no question about it among any Americans there now.
But at one time, he was the darling of the American State Department, wasn't he?
Well, I think certainly he was the only person from 1954 until we had a choice. We had no alternative. And as I said earlier, in the first few years, things went very well until about 58. But again, he was unable to keep up with the changes that were taking place in his own country. And he got so out of step that he finally fell.
Emery, I have some other callers waiting, so I want to thank you for calling Night Call, sir. Thank you for your comments. Mr. Emery Hill, a gentleman from Ohio, listening on WFBM in Indianapolis. Let's go out to Kalispell, Montana. A listener on KGEZ, Mr. Wayne Johnson. Good evening, Mr. Johnson. Speak right up. You're on night call.
Yeah, I would like to ask two questions.
Yes, sir.
Is the plan to take over North Vietnam as well, eventually, unite them as one?
Jim, do you want to comment
All
on
right. Our government has stated time and again that we do not intend to change any boundaries. All we want is to have the South Vietnamese left in peace. Now, if there are negotiations between North and South Vietnam leading to unification of the country, that's up to those two groups of Vietnamese. But all we want to do is to restore the situation to a condition of peace so that South Vietnam and North Vietnam can both develop and prosper.
And your other question, Wayne?
Okay. How long a period after South Vietnam is settled do you figure that it will take before they are able to establish a government that they will be able to govern themselves properly?
Well, in this field, I don't like to be a prophet. I do know this from my own associations with the Vietnamese, that the day that it's generally agreed that there is peace in the country, there's going to be pressure for an election of some type. These people have very active political forces, too many in some ways. So they're fragmented. And they're certainly going to work for some kind of an election. I would say almost within months after a peaceful condition exists, there will be some kind of nationwide election. The people, they want it very much. And although many of the common people don't understand the processes of election, I did see one take place last May 30th in the cities and provinces. I saw it in Saigon. And it was a very effective demonstration of what can be done among people with little education.
Wayne, I want to thank you for calling Night Call, and thank you for your comments, sir.
You bet.
Good night. Mr. Wayne Johnson, a gentleman from Kalispell, Montana, listening on KGEZ. Mr. Keyes, in about 30 seconds, let me ask you the million-dollar question on tonight's show. Is it possible to teach the Vietnamese to govern themselves?
Russ, I don't think there's any question about that. It is possible. In one sense, they don't have to be taught. They have a couple thousand years of history, most of which has been one of fighting against the Chinese for their own independence. They want to govern themselves, and given half an opportunity, I think they will do so very successfully.
Our guest tonight was Mr. James D. Keyes, and he was from the Agency for International Development. Jim, I want to thank you for being on Night Call.
Thanks a lot, Russ.
Tomorrow night on Night Call, our guest will be Dr. Viola Clark, and our topic, Return Peace Corps Volunteers. Let's use them to help our children. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.